The Offside Rule, We Get It, with Lindsay Hooper, Hayley McQueen and Kate Borsay.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Offside Rule podcast. It's myself, Lindsay Hooper, this is I.
Hello, it's Kate.
Kate Borsay. And we don't have Hayley McQueen. Hayley McQueen is up north. She's dumped us for a football match. I suppose that's the only excuse that goes on the Offside Rule podcast. But stepping into the breach, it's Faye Carruthers.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Great to have you in.
Thanks.
special. You are special. Now, as you might or may not have heard in that last little bit, there was a bit of a munch there. Do it again.
Oh, no, I'm not. I don't want people to hear me eating. It's pretty disgusting. But this is fudge. And so it's being devoured rather than chewed. It's just being put in the mouth and done.
If anyone's listening to this for the first time, I do apologise. We don't normally mention the word fudge in the first few minutes.
I've been down to Plymouth over the weekend. And, of course, Devon is famous for its fudge. I had a conversation with Faye on the phone where I was coercing her to come in and do the podcast with us. And, of course, her eyes lit up when I said, I'm just going to enter a fudge shop. So I thought, I've got to bring some fudge. Already you're devouring it. Can you leave it alone now?
No, it's nearly half gone.
Yes, and also Molly, because Kate's got a little girl, has got a footballing little lollipop. Do you like this?
I love it. Looks a bit like Neil Shipperley, though. I'll have to take a picture of it. In fact, Neil Shipperley is coming up a little bit later in my chat, which is why I mentioned him. But yes, certainly of the rather tubby mould. Sorry, Shippers.
Oh, sorry, Shippers. When I was at Plymouth, I've just got to say, I glimpsed a sight of the Plymouth Argyle squad because I was at the Plymouth Life Centre where they filmed Splash. I was interviewing Tom Daly, actually. And they all came trekking through, ruined my interview. I had to record a whole section again. Noisy bunch is what I wanted to say about the Plymouth Argyle lads, if any of them are listening. But in other footballing matters over the weekend, which links us in nicely, although Plymouth Argyle weren't included, but of course Luton Town were, the FA Cup. Oh. Faye, I'm sorry that we have to meet under these circumstances.
I was going to say, why could I not have come in when I've been giddy and excited the last couple of rounds? It was a real shame, actually. I went to the game. We played so well, but Millwall just outclassed us. We made some very silly mistakes. So I enjoyed the game, but it was actually more before the game that I enjoyed because I couldn't watch the game with any kind of joy when we're making silly mistakes like that and end up losing 3-0. But before the game, my dad and myself were invited on the pitch by Blue Square to carry the Come On You Hatters orange flag with a load of ex-players, including Kingsley Black, who is an absolute legend, the nicest guy you could meet. Him and his son Charlie. Charlie actually plays for Luton's Academy as well and goes to my old school, as we were chin-wagging about. But there was also Scott Oakes, who of course scored the hat-trick against West Ham all those years ago, sorry West Ham fans, and Marvin Johnson as well. And it was just such a lovely walking on the pitch, and they clearly weren't clapping for me and my dad, they were clapping for the ex-players, but it was still really nice to kind of walk around the ground like that and give the flag. So that was the most exciting part of my day. The game itself, unfortunately, we actually held our own against Millwall. We were as good as they were. It was a shame, but we weren't expecting to get that far in the first place. So to be honest, I'm quite proud of us, and now I just want us to concentrate on the league, because the FA Cup, regardless of what everybody says, has been a distraction, and it's meant that our form in the conference has been pretty awful. So I'm looking forward to us pushing on from now.
Well, that match was finishing and I was going on air to do a football show down in Devon covering the Devonshire sides, but of course we covered the FA Cup as well, and it was so distracting because you saw Arsenal getting dumped out, Colin Kazim-Richards with a goal for Blackburn, what a result that was, and Arsene Wenger has just been pummeled this week. Press conference yesterday and he just was not happy.
Yeah, he sounded off, didn't he, because they were talking about a 2-year contract extension for him, and he was just like, look, this is not what we should be talking about. He didn't want to talk about the Bayern game either.
Even though he did actually say he did want to talk about that and then not answer the question about it, which is quite amusing.
Yeah, he completely contradicted himself. He then had a massive go at a journalist. Forgive me if I'm wrong, Neil, but I think it was Neil Ashton. He had a bit of a pop at and was like, well, why are you asking me? And Neil was like, well, I'm asking you because I want to know your opinion about it.
And it's your press conference.
And it's, of course, Wenger's press conference. There were about 10,000 fans missing at that Arsenal game as well, and that's been noted too. I think they've just got to move on from that as quickly as possible. He brought his big guns out towards the end of the game and it didn't do what it needed to do, and they just need to move on very, very quickly now, Arsenal.
Well, let's finish off with our FA Cup quick chat, because the quarterfinal draw was then made in full, and one of the picks of those ties, Manchester City up against Barnsley. Faye, you picked that one out.
Yeah, love that game. I just love the fact that Barnsley Barnsley are going to go to the Etihad, and you know it's going to be a fantastic occasion for their fans. Not that far away for all of them either. So yeah, I think that's my tie of the round. I'm quite looking forward to that one.
Winner of Oldham and Everton go up against Wigan. Wigan, I thought, showed some great team camaraderie in their match. Millwall, who of course dumped you guys out, Luton go on to face Blackburn. Would you have liked Blackburn?
I wouldn't have been that bothered actually. So yeah. League for us now.
And Manchester United or Middlesbrough up against Chelsea.
Which is one for Hayley McQueen, of course, if Middlesbrough can defeat Chelsea in the fifth round. What an antagonising tie for her as a Middlesbrough and a Manchester United fan. The little devil in me hopes it happens.
Well, it's win-win for her in this round anyway, whatever happens. We've got to touch on one final result. Kate, it's not very often that you can just sort of enjoy a 5-0 thumping of Swansea. Isn't this the first result for Liverpool against a top half of the Premier League side where they've actually got a 5-0 scoreline this season? So, I mean, they showed great spirit. And I thought Daniel Sturridge was inspired. I thought he had a great match.
He's impressed me so much, actually. And we'll talk a little bit later on about players rejuvenating their careers. Obviously, it's early days for Sturridge, but he's very much rejuvenated. 4 goals in 5 Premier League games for Liverpool. Now, OK, Swansea rested 7 players because of the League Cup final this weekend. Let's not ignore that. But at the same time, how great for Liverpool to get their confidence back, to get their scoring boots on in and knock 5 in against the Swans. Really wanted to mention Jose Enrique's goal. It was a 3rd goal for Liverpool. It was just a lovely team effort. It was, you know, about really good touches, skill, precision, and a lovely goal by him. So I was really, really pleased for him. And that Suarez, 2 8-goals in 10 Premier League games. Now, you know, Sturridge gives Suarez the space, those little pockets of space that Suarez likes. Sturridge sits on the opposing team's defenders and, you know, creates that space for Suarez, and that's why they're working so well together. It's really exciting.
We were giving you a few moments. We're not going to give you too long, Kate. So that was your Liverpool section.
That's it.
Just a reminder then that you can download the Offside Rule podcast every single Thursday. It's also available via iTunes, and we're on Twitter. So give us a follow at Offside Rule Pod. We've had a little bit more of an extensive chat at the start of this because of the FA Cup. But still to come, our 3 topics this week. A family affair. Paul Ince becoming Blackpool manager. He'll now have to manage his son, Tom. And we're talking about running in the family. Different people that have been in part of the same club and had success. So think about that first of all. We'll come back to that. They think it's all over. David Bentley suddenly turns up at Blackburn. Any players that have been rescued from the mire and rejuvenated their careers? Have a think about that. We'll also, for our third lighter topic, having Faye Carruthers in the studio with us to talk this week. We're going to have a rising star from the non-league. We're giving you a non-league theme.
Thanks.
We're also going to get your non-league roundup in a bit of a verbal form, yeah, a bit of a chatty way, because, of course, you usually do our non-league roundup, but it seems silly throwing to you, so we'll get you to talk about promotion pushes there. We'll also have a Twitter topic of the week, which we'll round up, and then we'll go to Rhiannon Jones for all the best of La Liga. It's been an interesting couple of weeks there, especially for Real Madrid, the team that she covers.
Hi, I'm Charlie Nicholas at Sky Sports, and I'm listening to the Offside Rule. Can't believe it. 3 girls talking about football. The game has lost its credibility. We're all going to lose our jobs very quickly. The girls are taking over.
So let's begin with topic 1, family affair. This was actually a suggestion by Kate Borsay. So I'm going to start with Kate. Paul Ince, he's become the manager of Blackpool. He's now going to manage his son, Tom. They're going to work together. Of course, we know that Tom Ince will be departing at the end of this season. It will be a short-lived affair. But are there any other father-son relationships, any other relations that you can think of where it's worked really well?
When I think family and football, and I think brothers, cousins playing football, fathers and sons playing football, I need look no further than the Allen family. It's like a dynasty of football, isn't it? And I was just researching this and having a little look into how those family ties worked at the times when those Allen brothers and cousins were playing football. And it's just magnificent. But let's first of all start with a father and son combo. And it's a current one. And they're doing really, really well together as well. Martin Allen and his son, Charlie Allen, both are Gillingham. In fact, it's a father and son combo to the extent that everywhere Martin goes, Charlie goes. Now, I know you can get nepotism and everything else within football, but it is so lovely because, do you know what? It's really paying off for Martin Allen and for Gillingham. They both first worked together at Brentford. Charlie joined the club when he was 14, and of course, his dad was first team manager there at the time. He then followed his dad to Notts County, where he made 9 appearances before being released. He then went on to Gillingham, of course, now managed by his dad. So far, he's made 22 appearances for Gillingham, Charlie Allen, and the club, of course, flying high top of League Two. So that's a very successful combo. He is, of course, the grandson of ex-Reading player Dennis Allen. His cousin Harry Grant is a professional footballer at Sheffield Wednesday. Let's break it down, folks, OK? The Allen family tree. Da-da-da-da. 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 Okay, so you've got three brothers, Les, Dennis and Ron. Okay, Ron isn't involved in football, but he does spawn a child, Paul, who was at Spurs, with Clive, who's the son of Les, along with Bradley. So Clive and Bradley Allen, sons of Les, they coached at Spurs together under Harry Redknapp. Martin Allen was the son of Dennis, who is the middle brother, let's just call him. Martin and Bradley were at QPR together for a short time. Martin and Clive were at West Ham together for a short time as well. It's an amazing dynasty of family. Football.
I hope BBC's Who Do You Think You are listening to this and they can genealogy go back on a football special. Faye, what have you got?
Well, currently, of course, you've got Steve and Alex Bruce, both at Hull now. Alex also a defender, just like his dad was. Started off with his dad at Birmingham as well before he went on loan to Oldham. There were some suggestions of nepotism going on there and suggestions that maybe Alex should leave Birmingham and pursue his career away from his dad and kind of break away a little bit, which he did. But back in July last year, he rejoined him at Hull on a two-year contract. He's had 29 appearances this season. Hull currently in second in the automatic promotion places. So clearly that's working as well.
Mm. Fantastic stuff. I'm going to the Clough dynasty because this is another big family footballing family tradition. Brian Clough, let's first of all talk about when he was manager at Nottingham Forest, Nigel Clough playing under him. So we had them father-son relation a little bit like the Ince scenario. And Nigel Clough doing very well under his father at Nottingham Forest and, you know, shoved in a load of goals. But I wanted to actually concentrate on the manager because how many times can you say that there are a family, father and son, that have managed the same team. So Brian Clough managed Derby County for 6 years and was prolific there. I mean, 1967 to 73, the magical years. He won promotion. 3 years later, they were actually English champions and they actually went through to the semi-finals of a European Cup as well. This is why you've got Clough Way. I mean, if you've got a road named after you, usually it's a great sign. Can we say it's as good for Nigel Clough? Well, Nigel Clough, in the current climate, he's still the manager of Derby County. He joined them in 2009. It actually feels like longer than that to me because I covered Derby County a lot when I worked in the East Midlands and I was thinking, is it really only four seasons? But he's signed up to 2015 and although he hasn't won promotion, he hasn't been relegated and he's steadily made progress. And let's not forget as well that in 2010, the year after he joined them, he made those wholesale changes to the squad. I think it was 39 transactions in total throughout that season. You had people like Robbie Savage exiting the club and new blood coming through. Will Hughes, which is one of the players that you've mentioned before, Kate, in the podcast that you've liked. He came through the youth academy and really Nigel Clough has earmarked and pointed out some really good young players. So although he is certainly in the shadows of his father, there is only one Brian Clough. It's great to see that Nigel Clough still taking on the Clough tradition through Derby County, and I wonder if he'll be one of the longest serving managers in some years to come. And if he gets promotion, I'm sure they will stick with him.
Do you think, for example, just to throw something else in the mix, that Darren Ferguson could end up at Old Trafford following in his dad's footsteps?
No. Quite simply, no.
I thought that's what you'd say. He was actually at Kenilworth Road on Saturday because he was watching Millwall ahead of their game. So.
I think he's more suited to Kenilworth Road, to be honest, than Old Trafford.
Harsh.
Oh, sorry. But he actually was linked with Wolves as well, wasn't he, at one point? And he played for Wolves. He played for Wolves. I don't know. Ask me in a few more weeks. Ask me in a few more weeks. We'll move on then to our next topic. I just wanted to say as well, currently Derby County ninth this season under Nigel Clough, so a good run for them. They could still maybe get in the playoffs.
Can I just mention something really interesting when we're talking family ties, and that's the Neville brothers, which are quite an obvious one. Obviously Phil's followed Gary pretty much wherever they've gone, and I was cussing up an interview the other day, a Phil Neville interview for a piece. And he was really fascinating. He said, wherever his brother had gone, he had, apart from obviously when he went to Everton. But what he did say is it was interesting watching his brother go into punditry and also coaching for England, because he said that's exactly what he wants to do. And he can see himself in a managerial / coaching role and doing punditry. So he's following again.
See, I'm an only child, but that would really annoy me. Don't wear my clothes. Don't follow my jobs.
The female take on football.
topic two, they think it's all over. David Bentley, back from the brink.
Back from Russia. Rust off.
He won't be featuring in Kate Partridge's reports anymore, will he? He's back at Blackburn now. And Kate, you just named this Rescued from the Wilderness. Loved it. Any players who were hung out to dry then who went on to rejuvenate their careers? As I've already touched on mine, I'm going to start off. Robbie Savage. I thought that he was a really good one to choose because, of course, Manchester City and Blackburn, being the club that we're talking about with David Bentley there, had brilliant career. And he suddenly just disappeared. He went down the radar. No one was really talking about him. A feisty footballer. And I always wonder that had he not been picked up by Derby County, it was £1.5 million in the end, that transaction in 2008. That was pretty low figure considering the quality of football he'd been playing. He was given this other chance and then he became club captain. Then he started doing all his media work and now he's got a really good punditry career. So I do wonder whether that return from the wilderness for him, really, without it, without Derby County, would we know as much about Robbie Savage as we do? And would we know how great he is hot to trot at dancing? Maybe not.
Shall I go on to mine?
Yes.
So I've picked out a few of you. Of course, there's Wayne Bridge going to Brighton. We've already talked about how fantastic that is and how rejuvenating that's been for his career. Someone who's had a long and illustrious career in the Premier League, but also lower down the divisions in these past few years as well, is David James. He was released by Bristol City last May, signed for Bournemouth at the age of 40. They're flying high, top of League One. So a rejuvenation of sorts there for David James. Didier Drogba, he is a rejuvenator to watch out for. He was, of course, moved to Galatasaray after an ill-fated spell with Shanghai Shenhua over in China.
See, I have to disagree with this. I don't think Didier Drogba was ever anything but brilliant. And I think he went for money. And I think, I mean, he actually left Chelsea on the most glorious of highs you could ever leave a club, winning Champions League, scoring the winning penalty. You know, I just think... I don't know. I don't think he ever went away. I just think he took a money, a payoff.
A mini sabbatical. But, you won't like mine in that case.
Whatever the case, he didn't get on in China, did he? So he is enjoying a rejuvenation of sorts over there in Turkey. Darren Bent. Now, this is a rejuvenation that's backfired. OK, so Darren Bent is at Spurs. And of course, Harry Redknapp, famously said that his wife, Sandra, could have scored a goal that Bent failed to score. And I love those footballing moments.
Sandra, you love her.
I love Sandra Redknapp, it's true. I also like the dog as well. Anyway, so he went to Sunderland, remember, after Spurs, and scored 32 goals in 58 appearances, rejuvenated his career. Then he made the fateful mistake of going to Aston Villa. So he enjoyed a rejuvenation, went to Aston Villa. The rest is history. I think we all know what's happened to Darren Bent at Aston Villa. That's a cracking shame, that one, isn't it?
I'm intrigued then. Which one aren't I going to like?
Well, I haven't actually picked a player. That's why you're not going to like it. I've kind of cheated and didn't really go in the world. Maybe went in the wilderness for about 4 months. I have picked André Villas-Boas. because I liked the line you wrote, who's been hung out to dry. And if anybody was hung out to dry, it was AVB, without a shadow of a doubt. And yet he bided his time. You know, he had to deal with temper tantrum players. He had to deal with ridiculous high expectations. He handled it all with immense dignity. He leaves Chelsea under a cloud after 9 months at the club. And then he turns up 4 months later at Tottenham. And look what Tottenham are doing at the moment. They're only a point behind Chelsea. They're pushing for Champions League. If he gets in the Champions, you know, you could say this season, without a shadow of a doubt, for André Villas-Boas has been a success. So he's the guy I'm going for. You couldn't have written him off, you know, winning the Europa League with Porto, etc. And yet people still, he was 33 when he did that. He's 35 now. And yet Chelsea were like dismissive and, you know, a lesser man, you could argue, could have disappeared totally into the wilderness. And instead, he comes back to Tottenham and proves his worth.
A little story about that from Chelsea angle. Always speak to ground staff, ladies, if ever you want the scoops on the clubs, because they tell you it all. And at Chelsea, I went down to Cobham and they were actually telling me that he was one of those managers that came in because they've had a lot. It's been a bit of a revolving door right down there. But he was one manager that went in. He spoke to every single person individually, made himself known. And they really speak very highly of him still at Chelsea. And I think that says a lot.
I'm just still not totally convinced. and I'm being proved wrong, aren't I, by him moving to Spurs, which I didn't think was a brilliant move. His time at Chelsea, I heard some very funny stories, you know, about his arrogance, about his presumptions of, you know, about him trying to impress the journalists with lots of language and you know, lots of complicated terminology and not quite getting it right. I think if Chelsea was a learning experience for him, then fair enough, Spurs is where he's going to do it. But jury's still out for me, I'm sorry.
Oh, I really like him. I went to a couple of his press conferences at Cobham and he really impressed me. I thought he was fantastic. His knowledge of the game and his interest in the youth side of the game I found fascinating, and I quite frankly could have sat there and listened to him for ages. And so I was quite pleased when he went to Tottenham, because Tottenham are a side I like, and I was pleased for them, despite a lot of the Spurs fans, you know, exactly the same as you, thinking jury's out. He had such a bad press. He was totally hung out to dry by Chelsea, which was really unfair because he had proved himself. I'm just hoping he does at Spurs properly.
And did you see him in the Mourinho documentary just before Real Madrid played Manchester United in the first leg? There was the documentary on ITV and the very young-faced AVB, and they were like taking the mickey out of him in the background when he was giving an interview. So
nobody's horrible about Jose being arrogant. So why, you know, why is it a problem that AVB is? Is it because he's younger? Because he does it with a little less pizzazz and a little less glamour? I don't know, but I personally, I like him.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stelling and you're listening to The Offside Rule. Three women talking about football. I'm used to listening to four old women talking about football on Saturday afternoons, so I'll definitely prefer this.
Well, we're moving on to our third topic, and it is a non-league theme because we have Faye Carruthers in the hot seat for Hayley McQueen this week. So we're going to talk rising stars in just a second. First of all, though, we'd usually hand over to you, Faye, yeah, but as you're right here, I'll just swing across to my right.
Over.
Yeah, yeah. And just ask you who's in line for promotion.
Well, it's an interesting season, actually, this season, because notoriously, the Blue Square Bet Premier has always had one standout team who's, you know, absolutely annihilated the competition and easily been promoted, and then everybody else has had to fight it out in the playoffs. This season's much more interesting. It's a lot tighter. There are a lot more league clubs have dropped down the pecking order and are in the conference now, but it's interesting because it's really between Grimsby and Wrexham. I think they're level on points at the moment. That's before Tuesday night's games, so I'll apologise if that then changes, but as I record this, they are level on points. But I can kind of... Wrexham have had interesting fortunes. They've been unlucky in the playoffs, but they have got a fantastic team. But I just think Grimsby edge it this season, and I've got a feeling they're going to take the automatic spot. And then what's very interesting about the dynamics of these two teams is they're actually both in the FA Trophy as well at the moment. So they've both won the first leg of their semi-finals, so they both could play each other at Wembley, effectively, which could then end up, you know, showing who's going to win the title. Is it going to be the same person? Could they do what York did last season, for example, which was the double FA Trophy and then promotion through the playoff final, which would be great. I would love to say that Luton are going to make... I mean, there's no... I really think that Luton, unfortunately, sorry Hatters fans, I'm normally optimistic, but this season there's just been too much fixture congestion, too much distraction from the FA Cup, and I just think automatic promotion's definitely out of sight. Playoffs are going to be really, really difficult. They've dropped away so far. Still games in hand to play. They have to win all of those games, otherwise there's absolutely no chance whatsoever. Kidderminster are doing well, and then you've also got Mansfield, as I said, Macclesfield, Forest Green, Newport, all in the mix. So it's going to be really difficult for Luton. It's going to be a fascinating end to the season to see who's going to take those four playoff spots. The argument always, again, goes back to, and I'm always pushing for this, it would be fantastic if our league would have three up, three down in line with League Two, because the standard in the football conference is of the similar standard to League Two, and all teams that have ever been promoted up from the conference have always done well, made a good account of themselves, even gone straight up and a double promotion up to League One, which Stevenage and Crawley have done. So I do find it infuriating that only one automatic spot goes, because it doesn't at parry with the standard, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, that's been talked about for years, and I'm hoping one day somebody will see sense and it will get sorted out. There is one other piece of non-league news to give you, which is that Lincoln have appointed their head of youth, Grant Brown, as their interim manager. That's after David Holdsworth left the club.
Well, I'll let you catch your breath for a second now.
Yeah, I did kind of go on a little bit of a mini rant there. I could have gone on forever and bored you senseless.
No, it's fine. We've got a non-league soapbox this week, and that's in honour of you joining us. So we'll talk a rising star next. And, of course, I had to dig out a Wolves one. This is my example. So Michael Kightley, now playing for Stoke City in the Premier League. Where did he start out as he was pulled through by Wolves, of course, to the top flight? It was Grays Athletic, of course. So I wanted to ask you about players that we can identify that have the potential to make that transition from non-league to Premier League. Okay, so this is a massive jump. So the couple of players, I'll just get you both started. The couple of players that I've chosen have actually already made a step up from non-league, but they've come from non-league. So number one would be a left back, James Meredith, who after last year, he made the move from York to Bradford.
Can I just say, I've spent my time researching players that are still in the non-league now.
Look, it's in black and white. From transition from non-league to Premier League. Mine's halfway through his transition. I'm going to stand by this. So my left back, James Meredith of York City, Cape Borsay, now at Bradford, on his way up the echelons of the league. And I'm going to do this for you again, just to rub it in once more. A striker, Jamie Vardy. I loved Jamie Vardy, and I think this is going to be a team that will really see him escalate. He's originated from Fleetwood Town. Leicester City signed him. Leicester on the charge. I'm looking at your piece of paper. You've got exactly the same, Faye.
I've got exactly the same. Really rated Jamie Vardy when he played against us.
So yeah. You've both cheated. No, you're the one that didn't pick up.
I've got some more.
You can, like, let me just say on the podcast, for Kate's benefit, you can always query any topic with me for clarification.
Or you can change the topic to suit your own answers, Lindsay Hooper.
Oh.
Can I just throw another one in? This isn't my thing. Calm down, Kate. Don't worry. I just wanted to let you know there is another player, arguably
higher
up, which is Chris Smalling, who actually came from Maidstone United.
But he's already in the Premier League.
Yes, I know. But
so if we go back to my topic.
No, but you mentioned Michael Kightley, and all I was trying to do was give another example of how the non-league has nurtured talent.
Yes.
And he did go up north, up to Middlesbrough, but he didn't really like it being away from home. So he left after a month, and then Fulham grabbed him. And then not that long after that, Manchester United went in.
He famously never played a game for Fulham, if I'm to understand correctly.
That's
if I remember correctly.
Not a professional
guy. I could also add DJ Campbell, Craig McHale-Smith will hopefully be a Premier League player very, very soon.
You can add that one. Is that one of your own? Are we taking that as one?
No, we're not, because it doesn't fit the remit, which is Lindsay Hooper. Could I just get you to read this? We want a
non-league rising star.
Right, so your players aren't in the non-league, are they?
We're just going to say, myself and Faye have both got Jamie Vardy. He'll be joining the higher echelons.
But I only had that as a backup of these are people who could potentially make it and used to be in the non-league, but he's not in the non-league anymore.
Well, those are mine. Let's move on.
Well, if you're going to go there, I was going to go Jamil Matt, of course, but he is now in the league, so I haven't gone for him. I've gone for Jamie White instead, who was part of Southampton's youth setup when he was a bairn. He won the 2006-2007 Academy Player of the Year award for them, but really dogged by injury. And this is where the non-league comes into its own. It rescues players that have been turfed out by clubs because of injury, because of form problems, or maybe just because of growing problems. Who knows? And they rescue them. And this is where the non-league works brilliantly, because these players get a second chance. And we must salute the non-league for that as well. Jamie White, as I said, he now plays for Conference Southside Salisbury City. He's a 23-year-old striker. He had such a bad time with injury. He did his cruciate ligament. He broke his leg and dislocated his ankle in a reserve team game. He's been out on loan to Shrewsbury and Eastleigh. He was released by Southampton in 2010. He was at Winchester City last season. He scored 54 goals for them last season, helping them to gain promotion to the Southern League Division One South. And Winchester rejected advances from Salisbury City initially, saying that they wanted him to go straight up into the league. Bournemouth were sniffing around, and I think he trained with Bournemouth for a little while. That wasn't meant to be, and he did sign for Salisbury City. He scored 18 goals in 26 appearances for the Whites. So he's my one to look out for, Jamie White.
Right, so I picked out a few players myself, but then I wanted to run a couple of them because a couple of them I haven't seen play. I've just heard amazing things about them. So I ran a couple of them by Alan Alger from Blue Square because obviously he sees much more games than I get to see because I work most weekends. But the guy who I've been hearing great things about is Grimsby's Aswad Thomas. He's a left back, but attacks really well as well, loves going forward, but knows how to defend as well. Alan says he's a fantastic prospect. He's also been playing for the England C team, only 23, called up to England in 2012. I think he's going to be quite an exciting prospect. I would go for this one, and you know, I'm being really obvious, but Andre Gray has been fantastic the last couple of seasons for Luton Town. I'm not entirely sure whether I can see him in the Premier League, so sorry to slightly slant the topic off, but I can definitely, to be honest, if Luton don't go up this season, I can't see them keeping hold of him because I think there'll be some top League One teams, if not Championship teams, after him because he's so pacey. He splits defences. He's great. And then the other guy that I picked out was a guy called Connor Jennings, plays for Stockport. He's actually technically on loan from Scunthorpe, so not actually a non-league player, but he's a striker, but he can play in a load of different positions. Only 21, also played for England C. And I'm just going to give you a couple of others that Alan pointed out to me as well, which was Jack McCreth from Macclesfield, good winger, apparently comfortable on the ball, speed and skill, one to look out for. And then I apologise if I pronounce this one wrong, Anthony Sarkovic from Chester. So basically coming to a Blue Square Bet Premier ground near you, Alan says. He has helped Chester towards the North title, which they might take this season. He says he's an interesting prospect to look out for.
Thank you very much. We're going to whiz through Twitter topic of the week. I just want a very quick answer from both of you. And it was inspired by Casey Stoney, who tweeted this week, "Ronaldo's hang time in the air is ridiculous." Of course, she was referring to his header for Real Madrid. And epic headers has been inspired as our topic. So either defensive beasts or anyone that you wouldn't want to tussle with in the air to try and score a goal. Who's been the best footballer in the air? We've been asking this on our Twitter page, at Offside Rule Pod. And these are some of the answers we've had. By the way, there've been a bit of a Wolves theme here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't ask for it. I didn't. Scott Field, who I know for a fact is from the FA and a West Brom fan, but he actually mentioned Don Goodman, great header of the ball, which he was. Dave Pallett has said Dixie Dean scored a fair amount one season after fracturing his skull and he's /greatest. Fracturing your skull. Brent Hartland says the best I've seen is Ron Davis of Saints, flat-footed with a barn door forehead assisted by Payne and Sydenham on the wings. He's obviously going back in time and reminiscing. Amjad said Vidic is certainly an absolute monster in defence. I suppose you can't disagree with that. Hernandez, for a small striker, Hernandez is definitely one of the best around. But this is where another Wolves guy comes in because Amjad's also said Stephen Fletcher is very good, which he is now at Sunderland. Also, Iona Russell, how about Tim Cahill? He may be under 6 foot, but I'm sure about half of his goals were headers. Finally, Scott Murphy, Andy Graham, Frank Stapleton, old school. Shearer was the one that I was going to go for, actually. Alan Shearer mentions him too. And I would also mention Andy Carroll. I think he's got a great head on the ball.
I can give you some stats for Tim Cahill because that was the one that I chose. And he actually scored 31 of his 54 goals, so more than half from a head in his 200 appearances for the Premier League.
Wow, Tim Cahill.
I wanted to plump for Bolton's Kevin Davis. Of the 73 goals that he's scored for Bolton so far, most of them have come from heading, particularly from set pieces, actually. The other chap I wanted to mention, and one who'll continue to get better and better of this, of course, is Marouane Fellaini. One of his attributes is his height. He's 6'4.5". You wouldn't want to get caught up with him in a kind of up-air tussle, though, would you? Because you get a mouthful of hair. He also netted one. Do you remember when Everton were playing Villa? They were 3-2 down and he netted that header to get the goal for Everton so that they could earn a point out of that game. Of his 10 Premier League goals so far this season, 4 have been headers.
And one that should be in there but isn't, but you'd think, wouldn't you, Peter Crouch? But he's actually better with his feet.
Yes.
He's the only 6'7" person I know who can jump 6'5".
Oh. Let's go on then to get a roundup from globally. We're going La Liga this week. Rhiannon Jones is going to sum up all things over in Spanish football for us. Rhiannon, what have you got?
Hola, chicas. Lindsay, this time just over a week ago, we were enjoying a tour of the Bernabeu. Gracias por venir. Seeing as I work for Real Madrid TV, let's start with a roundup of the whites. Cristiano Ronaldo's been enjoying a fantastic couple of weeks. He warmed up for the eagerly anticipated Champions League clash against his former club with an inspirational performance against Sevilla. He scored his 20th hat-trick for Real Madrid and equaled Paco Gento's record of 182 goals. He's now the club's sixth most prolific player. Just a few days later, the Bernabeu hosted that huge last 16 tie against Sir Alex Ferguson's side. The Portuguese star scored a bullet header to tie the clash and set up a tantalising second leg at Old Trafford on March the 5th. This weekend, another victory for Real Madrid at home. Despite playing more than 70 minutes with 10 men, they beat Rayo Vallecano 2-0 with goals from Alvaro Morata and Sergio Ramos. Victories for all five at the top this week. Lionel Messi reached another landmark for Barcelona. His 300th and 301st goals for the club helped the league leaders overturn a half-time deficit to defeat Granada 2-1. It was the Catalans' first win in three away matches before they face AC Milan in their last 16 clash at San Siro to be played tonight at the time of recording. Atletico ended their winless streak on the road and bounced back from their European defeat to Rubin Kazan with a 3-0 win over Valladolid. Falcao gave them a first-half lead with his 20th league goal of the campaign. He's now just four goals shy of his total from last season and still has 14 matches left to go. Malaga's 1-0 victory over Athletic Bilbao ensured they remain fourth in the table. Meanwhile, they lost 1-0 to Porto in the first leg of their Champions League last 16 tie. And hot on the heels of Malaga, Valencia continue to fight for the fourth and final Champions League spot after defeating Mallorca 2-0 at Mestalla. That's it for now, girls. Until next time, adios.
Big thank you to Rhiannon and a big thank you to our special guest for this week. Thanks for stepping into the fold, Faye Carruthers.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. Great fun.
We'll welcome back Hayley McQueen next week. We'll have more topics. Get downloading. Remember, we're out every Thursday at Offside Rule Pod. We'll have more score predictions, I'm sure, to come because it's becoming that part of the season. By the way, before we go, League Cup? Any predictions?
Oh, do you know what? I'd love to see the underdogs Bradford win, but unfortunately I'm going to go for Swansea. I think they're going to win 2-0.
3-1 to Swansea for me, and I'm taking a picture of the chocolate version of Neil Shipperley for the Facebook page.
Oh yeah, go and have a look. We'll be on Facebook as well. I'm going to go 2-1 actually, so we've covered all grounds there. We'll see you again next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
The Offside Rule, We Get It, with Lindsay Hooper and Kate Borsay. Produced by Sarah Grunn.